This is Cindy Clary interviewing Addie Stangland, September 15th, 1980, tape 5A and B. The questions on this interview are out of sequence in order to fill in the gaps from the previous two interviews that were recorded over. Addie, we're going to go back and cover some of the questions that we already have talked about, but that were recorded over in the last interview.
Okay.
So I'd like to begin once again by asking you about the incident when you were working at Douglas. In the telephone interview, you talked about this incident where the tasks, you were acting lead person in the tasks. You divided the tasks up between the black women and the white women, and what that was all about.
Well, I was working graveyard, and the foreman came over and asked me if I would take the lead that night on the Winston machine, because the lead woman hadn't showed up for work. So I went over, and in looking over all the materials and the people who were working, and all the colored girls were on the machine. They sat up there on top of the machine and watched the wingskin go underneath and see that it was not welded along. It was all automatic. And all the white girls were down on the floor and the etch tank. And
what kind of job did they have?
Well, they had to dip the material into the etch, which is an acid. And then both the part where the spot welds were to go, they had to buff that. Neither job was all that much, except that the girls on the floor were on their feet. The girls on the machines were sitting down. And they were unhappy about how this was going on. So I said, well, they'll stay on the machines until the first break. And then after the break, why, all the girls on the floor will go on the machine. And after the lunch period, the ones on the machine now will go back on the machine. And after the second break, the ones on the floor now will go on. There will be alternate. And girls on the floor were happy with that solution. However, the colored girls weren't happy about it. And the next night, none of them showed up for work. None of the colored girls. And of course, I was immediately under fire because they wanted to know what I had done to keep those girls from coming back to work. And I said, well, I thought I was being fair. I said, the girls that were on the machine, the first part of the evening would go on to the floor after the break. And they were alternate during the whole shift. Well, they figured that was all right, too. But the girls never did show back up to work.
Was that a usual pattern at work there, where all black women would work in one place?
Not really. The usual pattern was that anybody on the machine was supposed to allow the one working with her to use the machine and learn how to do it. So if the emergency came up, anybody was qualified. So that was, it wasn't being discriminatory at all. It was being fair.
Were there ever any repercussions for you around that?
No, know, they never said anything more. They just want to know why, and I told them why. And they accepted it as a good solution, even for both of them.
Did the black woman talk to you about it at all?
Not a word. They just, all of them just failed to show up. They evidently talked it among themselves, or all of them wouldn't have left. And I think they quit, I don't know. The foreman never alluded to it again, and while I served in that capacity several times later, they wouldn't have given me that again had it not been there.
Okay, I'd like to ask you again about the Air Force man that you told me came to watch you do your work while you were at Douglas.
Well, the Air Force men used to come through, I guess they did on all three shifts, whether it was to check on the machines or whether it was just check on personnel. Anyway, this one used to come in, and he spent quite a lot of time there, and he'd always managed to be there at lunch break so that I could go out to lunch with him. And he was going to be sent away. So he asked me if I would marry him before he left. But he was 10 years younger than I was. And to me, if he was going to be overseas, when he came back, he'd still be 10 years younger. And I didn't know how that absence would make that work. So I told him I'd wait for him. Well, he gave me a very lovely ring and said, well, he'd be back. And he'd be expecting letters, and would I come to the East Coast, and when he came back to meet him, and I said, I'll do that. So we left it just that way, and I think we exchanged about 3-4 letters, then there were no more letters. So I never received any word that anything had happened to him, but he never returned. I never heard from him again. I assumed, though, that he was killed in action. I later gave the ring to my daughter-in-law when her little boy was born, my son's boy. But the memory lingers on. What might have been.
You were very fond of him.
Well, yes. He was not often a nice person. Very respectful, and he wasn't one of those one of those people that was pushy or anything like that. He was more or less just cut out to be a family man.
Did you see him outside the plant?
Oh, a few times, yes. Yes, we went out to dinner several times, and then he came over to my house and met my children, and they liked him. They thought it'd be wonderful to have a father, but the age thing stood in the way.
Do you still feel that way about age?
Yes, I do. Yes, I did. Too many years makes a lot of difference, especially during the ages of the 40 to 60. That's a big item. And I was going into my 40s at that time. And he was then only, I think he was 29. And it can really and truly be something that would cause a lot of problems. I can see that by the older men now. Most of them lean too hard on their wives. How would I put that? They just don't seem to conform unless their wives tell them how. And a single man is more or less in his 60s and 70s, he's more or less an overgrown child. He has to be waited on and all that. Well, this man was younger, and I didn't know how he would react to my wrinkles and gray hair. And they were bound to show up. And then I did have those two children that had to be clothed, fed, and educated. And I wasn't sure how being away from children would affect him when he came back. That was another problem. Oh, I'm glad I didn't marry him, because it makes a nicer memory thinking I could have than to have found out that it just wasn't going to work.
As the war was winding down, did you anticipate being laid off? Did you know that was
well, I thought that I would be, yes. I thought that the boys coming home would want jobs, and those who had worked there would want to come back to their jobs. And I got my pay. They had given up the 4 years of the best years of their lives. And I felt that it was only right that I would step aside if I was asked to.
How did you feel about losing your job at Douglas?
Well, I felt bad, naturally. I was wondering where I was going to get another job and if it was going to be a good pay. Well, at the time, I was laid off on a Friday, and I had looked around for work during the time, I think it was 10 days, that they gave us notice. I don't remember, but I think it was. And I looked around for a job, and I saw this place advertised, and I called them up and asked them for a job, and they wanted to know what my qualifications were, and they hired me over the phone, sight unseen. And they said their truck would pick me up on Pacific Coast Highway at 12th Street in Seal Beach. On Monday morning. So, I went to work Monday morning for a new company.
After leaving Douglas on Friday. How did they give you notice of your layoff at Douglas?
Well, they gave us a written notice. I think those people that were laid off in 44 when the war ended, I think they were just laid off by word of mouth, but I worked on another year, and I was at 45 that it was ended. And then I worked on another year, and I worked for this yacht firm then for 4 years, and then the owner was going to retire, And he sold the business to two of the employees who had worked for him all during the war, and their families were going to be part of the business, so that made another layoff for me. So I put in my application to go back to Douglas, and I was rehired within, I think about 3 weeks. I really didn't get an unemployment check.
And you were laid off from Douglas the first time in 46. Did they give you any kind of an exit interview, or did they talk to you when you left?
Yes, yes, they did. They want to know if I would go on another shift. So my children were still loved. They were going to high school, starting in the high school. No, they were in the last elementary. They were in the elementary grades, their last year, and I couldn't see going on to anything but day shift, and they didn't have a day shift job open for me. I could only go on swing, which is not a good shift for anyone with children, especially a one-parent home, because children have a way of finding where to go in the evenings that they shouldn't. But if there's the parent at home, they don't have that option to do this. So I was very much in favor of seeing my children got raised the right way.
How did your life change for you after you changed jobs from Douglas to the
Yacht? Well, I had a little bit more of a social life than I had because I worked days. And when I went down to the Yacht place, I met a lot of the yachtsmen. Some of them were fabulously wealthy, and a lot of the skippers. And the boss used to take us out on his yacht when he was having a difficult buyer for his canvas work. And he'd take me along so that I could talk things up too. So I'd always take my son along. My daughter never cared about going, but my son always wanted to go. And he fell in love with boats. So Percy used to use him to carry things onto the boat. And when he had some special thing he had to do in Los Angeles, he'd take Bob along to, kind of talk to him on the trip going and coming. It gave Bob a man to talk to, which I was grateful for. Boys should have a man to talk to now and then, and I was grateful for that. So I would say that life didn't change much, except a little more social life, something I hadn't had while I worked graveyard. And the boys in the shop were very congenial. As a matter of fact, one time, after my daughter got in high school, she was a football queen. And one of the boys that was going with a girl who went to Orange, and she was in the band. And I said, oh, well, Huntington Beach is bound to be Orange because my daughter's the football queen. And he said, "Oh, no. Oh, Orange is going to win that football." So we had a bet out. If Orange beat Huntington Beach, I was supposed to give them a chicken dinner. And if Huntington Beach beat Orange, well, then he would treat us all to a chicken dinner. So the boss said, "Well, that sounds pretty good. How about making some cushions and we'll all go?" So we all went in the truck, and I sat on the Orange side of the stadium, and I rooted for both sides. It was a tie. And so nobody had to treat anybody. However, we did have dinner at each other's houses. It was a lot of fun. The boys were younger than me. And two of them weren't married. Two of them were. But we went to each other's houses, and we'd have dinners at their house. They'd come to mine, and they'd fish off the boats, and they were out there fitting. And we'd have fish sometimes. Sometimes we'd have the hamburgers. So it was a very congenial sort of job. And on my birthday, they brought a cake in. There were three skippers off different yachts. One was from the Valero 2, which the Phillips Oil Company gave to the Shah of Iraq for oil rights. And it was really something. And one was off of the Morgan yacht, and one was off of the Escapade, which was the Walter Lyson's boat. He was a scenario writer, Hollywood. And they brought this cake in, and there were 36 candles on it. And I said, "Oh, I didn't know you knew how old I was." He said, "Oh, that's only half of them." So it was fun. It was really fun.
Did you do other kinds of socializing outside of the from work?
Oh, yes. Yeah. We used to have a lot of card games there in Seal Beach at City Hall. And I was always included in the card games, in the Masonic and Eastern Star. I didn't belong, but my sister did, and I had helped her so much, you know, with different things. And I later worked a lot with Job's daughters. And they always included me. It was nice. It was very nice.
How did you meet your second husband? When was that?
Oh, I met him through his sons. His sons used to come to my house. They were very friendly with my children. They'd gone to school together. All during the war and after. And, of course, he was always having to come over there and pick them up, and they got home at night. And after his wife died, I guess he didn't know what to do with himself. He started coming over, and he'd be there before I'd get up in the morning, pounding on the door, wanting to know if I wasn't up yet. He was lonesome. So he started coming over, and at first he wanted me to cook breakfast for him, and I decided that I'd done enough work. I worked swing shift. And I didn't care about working before I went to work. So I told him, well, he could take me out to lunch before I went to work. So then he kept asking me to get married. He wanted to go on trip, and he wanted somebody to go with him. Well, that was right up my alley. I hated to just have to stay home all the time, never had enough money to go anywhere, and I thought, well, maybe this is a way out. So I married him. And we did have a lot of nice trips. But all was in my car. I didn't trust his dragon. And well, it was no love match, I'll say that. I don't think I ever loved anybody but my first husband, my children's father. Because, well, I was then in my 50s. And I think you give your best love to when you're young, not when you get older. It's just a compatible companionship after you get older. And he was willing to take it on that basis. He was willing to so that I'd go with him. We did have a lot of fun, I'll say that. But then his drinking, I think the it's on none.
We were talking about your second husband. You said you did have a lot of fun.
We did have a lot of fun, but then he had a drinking problem that got worse as time went on, and he took the bottle to bed with him, and it kind of spoiled the whole relationship. And oh, his sons were nice. He had five of them. They're nice boys, all of them. And I got along with his family good. But then he wasn't supposed to drive my car. But he did. Every time I'd leave home, he'd get in that car and was a brand new Buick. And one morning he called me up at work and said he'd been in an accident. And they were sending my nephew after me. I said, well, was it a pretty bad accident? And my sister said, yes. So my nephew came, picked me up at work, and took me to the hospital. He was dead on arrival. That ended that one. It was 5 years.
How was that for you?
Well, I was still working at Douglas, and I just went right on. After I stayed out for about a week, and I went back to work and finished my last year till I'd be 65. And then it really was nothing to rehabilitate myself again, because it was just 5 years, and my sister was a widow, and she needed my my companionship or leadership. She wouldn't go out and eat by herself, and so I used to go over and pick her up, and we'd go out and have dinner together every night. I worked day shift the last 4 years. And she ate better, and we did take some very nice trips before, before I retired and after. I went to Alaska while I was still working, and she went along. And after I retired, we went to Canada. We went to Canada before I retired, and to Alaska. Then we went to, then we went back to